Welcome to Beyond the Code, AI and Law. I am your host, Letlhokwa Mbeki. In this series, we look past the algorithms to understand the human and legal implications of the fourth industrial revolution. Today, we are exploring a unique intersection. How does artificial intelligence impact the identity, the reputation, and the legal framework of an entire continent? To discuss Brand Africa in the Age of AI, I am joined by a global authority on branding and a relentless advocate for the African Renaissance, Tebe Ikalafeng. Tebe, welcome to Beyond the Code, AI and Law.
Thank you. It's about time.
Yeah.
It's a matter of time when you're going to start this. I'm glad you have.
Tebe, you have built your thinking around the idea that brand identity is inseparable from cultural identity. As AI begins to shape how stories are told, translated, and distributed globally, who controls the prompt that controls the narrative? I mean, that is an important question. Is Africa walking into this moment with its eyes open?
Well, I love what Thomas Sankara once said.
Uh-huh.
He said, "He who feeds you controls you." So even in the AI space,
yeah,
the fact that we are not the ones that are feeding the the AI, the systems with African knowledge systems, with African culture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what we're getting a replay of that which is not us authentically. And if you think about, for example, with the Getty images and all those.
Yeah.
So a lot of the photographers traditionally we're not Africans.
Right.
There's people from outside coming in and taking photographs of us. So that becomes the bank from which all AI systems are referencing African.
Yeah.
So when you say, show me an African,
they're going to show you
the stuff that the Western world or the other world means when they say an African.
An African looks like this. Yeah.
So he who
feeds you
controls you.
So you are exactly
what we put into the system.
So the one that feeds this large learning models controls us.
It controls us because it becomes how we see ourselves. So let's say in an academic space, when you are doing research, for example.
Yeah.
Now, because the knowledge base doesn't come from Africa, if you will, or not by Africans, certainly. So when you get responses back, those responses are shaped already by those
who are feeding
fed. The learning models.
So we better get going, you know, in terms of feeding these large learning models. Tebe, AI systems are essentially mirrors. They reflect back the world as it was fed to them, back to the feeding. If the corpus training these models is predominantly Western, we are letting someone else's mirror define our reflection. So what's the cost of that distortion? And is it recoverable?
Beba Abrane from she's an Ethiopian AI researcher.
Yeah.
And she demonstrated. She demonstrated that largely a lot of the images that speak to Africa are highly sexualized. And if you will come from a certain lens of a Western culture.
That's right.
That speaks to the fact that we're not in so much in control of that which that goes in there, then this system here begins to reflect, to mirror how the world sees us, not necessarily how we see ourselves.
Incredible. Tebe, there's a provocative legal argument emerging globally that training an AI on your culture without consent is a form of extraction, not unlike mining. From your vantage point?
Well, you know, when we are mining when we are mining this data, we are mining that which has been, if you will, created to be the norm.
Yeah.
So now what happens? That because we generally are not in control of our stories, then our stories then become made generic, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you're looking at whether from a creative space, whether it's the Kente cloth, or whether it is from our music, our piano.
Yeah.
So because they're creating these storylines and from their end, then becomes when people mine this, they mine those versions yeah. of them, and meaning that we've now lost control mm. of that of the story and that narrative. Mm. That when they make money mm. out of this, mm. and we try to assert ourselves afterwards
right.
and say, "But that's my idea."
Is it too late?
It's too late. It's mm. a little bit like an IP in a way mm. that if you mm. don't register your mm. idea, the first mm. person who registers it mm. owns the idea.
Wow!
Not who originated the idea.
Wow!
So I think that's from a legal IP law mm. Perspective, mm. Which you're quite familiar with. It's pretty much along the same way that mm. much of mm. our cultures, mm. much of our storylines mm. have been created into generic products.
Yeah.
And as a result, when people mine these stories mm. and they extract them
right.
and they convert them mm. just like in mining
yeah.
Or they yeah. do it on their own terms.
Yeah.
You know, like in mining,
yeah. Yeah.
they take the raw materials,
yeah.
which is ours,
mm-hmm.
export it,
yeah.
converts it,
yeah.
sends it back,
mm-hmm.
and we buy it at a premium.
Wow.
The same story in AI, if you will.
This is incredible. In a nutshell, are we watching another resource leaving the continent uncompensated?
Yes, you know, a little bit in a way, isn't it? Now, if you think about the stories about rooibos as
yeah.
an example.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, remember, rooibos is a South African.
Mm-hmm.
It's a South
mm-hmm.
African, just not just rooibos, many other
yeah.
many other indigenous mm-hmm. African ideas
right.
which have been created or are mm-hmm. indigenous to a continent. Many of them leave the continent and we do not benefit much from them.
Yeah.
And that's an unfortunate story of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's so important that even from an AI / an IP perspective, mm-hmm. that we take the controls right now.
Yeah.
We become the sources and the engines mm-hmm. of what goes in there
yeah.
and not come in at the end of the process and mm-hmm. try to fight.
Yeah. Then it's too late.
It's too late. I always mm-hmm. explain to people, it's a horrible mm-hmm. thing to say. I say, mm-hmm. it's like birth and prevention.
Yeah.
If you buy a condom, it's 20 rand.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's going to cost you 200,000 rand
yeah.
to maintain that child.
Yeah. Yeah.
It becomes harder to fight that it is your ideas
yeah.
once they're in, or rather to try and correct some of the misperceptions that have been created over the years about the continent.
Tebe, how can AI help African brands leapfrog traditional barriers to compete globally?
If you look at the continent, we do not have some of the legacy issues
yeah.
that many of the international brands have got.
Mm.
That's why from a tech perspective, if you look at, for example, M-Pesa.
Yeah.
M-Pesa coming from Kenya.
Yeah.
It leapfrogged banking
yeah.
In a traditional way because places like Safaricom in Kenya did not have to follow the traditional models of doing
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
So it is for that reason that countries like Rwanda, as an example, have positioned themselves as the technology hubs, the technology centers of the world. What that does now, it means that they now attract AI and technology developers to come and develop African solutions in an African context. Matter of fact, there's a story that's been said about even M-Pesa, that even M-Pesa actually was English people who came to Africa because in the Western world, they already had the banking solutions. They came to Africa, to Kenya, to Safaricom, and they developed the idea of M-Pesa.
Wow.
So similarly, in the way that what Rwanda has done, if we can create an enabling environment
right.
here in the continent so that those AI solutions are developed in Africa,
right here on the continent,
in the continent, then we'll be able to get the type of outputs or products which are inspired by Africa, but also there'll be a bit of authenticity in terms of those outputs.
Now there are talks about the Savannah Valley.
Yes, that sounds nice,
isn't it?
Well, Kenya. Mm-hmm. Kenya created this. I think it's the Savannah Valley. It's out of Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
They created that long before even Rwanda could think about their innovation hubs.
Mm-hmm.
Long before, and I mean, the last year I was at an innovation hub summit, which was held in Kenya.
Right.
And it was interesting to me because I said, that's exactly where it should be held here in Africa.
Yeah.
Because some of the solutions and the areas, to back to an earlier point about leapfrogging the West, some of those solutions will be best if they're developed here in Africa, because we are an open canvas and we don't have the legacy issues that many of the countries have got.
Tebe, the EU went first with the AI Act and it's already been criticized as innovation hostile. The US, well, is still finding its footing. Africa, with the AU's data policy framework already in place, has a window to write rules that are both protective and generative. From your legal perspective, what would winning the AI governance race actually look like for the continent?
Well, I should ask you about the legal, from a legal perspective.
Well, I want to hear your perspective from Brand Africa point of view.
So I think in that instance, it goes back to our broader comment today, that we should be proactively writing the laws.
Mm.
But now if you look at a country like Finland,
they've
integrated AI, AI knowledge or AI skills into the academic
curriculum,
curriculum. So it means that but not only it means that even from a legal perspective we should be thinking the same way.
That's right.
And I know South Africa we're working on some of those but I think we need to be thinking like Estonia thinking like Finland and asking ourselves a question that even from a legal perspective how do we protect the continent from all those. I mean we spoke I think sometime offline you and I about how the space is so open and so lawless, if you will. So as an African, as a legacy in the space, or rather not legacy, we can leapfrog everybody else by creating the right legal framework to be able to govern the space. But also to ensure that ideas which are created in Africa benefits Africans. So a little bit like what maybe Google Google Australia has done with Google. I can't remember if you remember, if you recall, I think it was a year or two ago, the Australian government said, wait, Google, you are generating money out of stories created by Australian newspapers. You ought to pay a percentage of your income or revenue to these to these originators. So it's an originators. So we have a responsibility as the law in South Africa and the rest of the continent to create the type of legal framework which prevents or protects originators. I think you also remember with the Hollywood Writers Guild. I think that's what they're called. That one of the big challenges they had last year. A couple of years ago when they boycotted, when they went on a strike, they said, wait, so you're trying to introduce AI to be able to take some of our thinking to shortcut and to kick us out of, to take us out of the space. So it means we are not going to be benefiting commercially. And perhaps even culturally, you are appropriating our thinking and our way of doing things. That's where I think the law is important, where the law should be coming to play, to protect the originators, but also to protect the authenticity of the provenance of the ideas.
Yeah, no, that's important, you know. And our problem with the law is that the law is always reactive, you know.
Particularly in the creative space, the creative economy space, if you protect the creator, the law at least can come and support and can support that. So even if it comes later, but at least if you prioritize protecting your indigenous knowledge, protecting your cultural space, the law can come in when it comes in, but at least it comes into a space where it is receptive to protecting the originators.
Tebe, if you had one seat at the table where Africa's AI feature was being written, one policy lever, one strategic bet, what would you push for and why?
I think the first important thing is I must have that seat in. I must have a seat at the table.
You are either at the table or you are on the menu, not on the table.
Exactly. So if I were there, I perhaps will push for two, three things. The one thing is to ensure that the right people are at the table.
Right people.
Because sometimes you are at the table, but with the wrong people who don't have your best interest at heart.
That's a problem.
So it's important. So now remember, there was a table in 1884 in Berlin, and the discussion was about Africa, but Africa was not was on the menu.
And
the results of where we are. So when I make sure that when I make sure that first that table is ours. And the right people are at the table. So it mustn't be a table created on other people's terms.
And as they say, if you are not invited, then build your own table.
Build your own table. May I say, forget the invitation. Start your own table. The second thing I would, I'd make sure I put on a table is is from a commerce perspective, to ensure that at the table that I am there to understand the ecosystem and the value chain of how value is created. And to push to ensure that that advantages Africa, and not that Africa is not in a, if you will, shouldn't be seen as the quarry or the extractive space where people are just mining ideas. That we actually should be at the full with a full mandate at the table. The third thing, also, what I perhaps will do at the table is I will ensure when it comes to areas of authenticity that our cultures are at the center of this. Now, if you think about what Ngugiwa Thiong'o said, I think it's in the 70s, when he stopped writing in English and he started writing in Kikuyu. Because he said, you know, our cultures carry so much.
Yeah.
They carry everything. They carry who we are, how we tell our story, the nuances. Now, we know this for sure. So, for example, if you look at ChatGPT, Africa, let's look at African ChatGPT. Africa's got about over 2,000 languages.
Right.
And ChatGPT only accounts for 26 of them.
Wow.
So if it only accounts for 26 of those languages, what about the rest of the continent? Yeah. So it means our stories are not told authentically. We are not fed in to the system authentically, and we don't benefit commensurately.
Who has the duty to feed that those languages into ChatGPT?
That's where the law and policy comes into place. But that's where it also ensures that you have the right people at the table. Because it shouldn't just be lawyers.
Yeah.
But it should also be the people who contribute to the product.
That's right.
That goes out the solutions.
That's right.
Because we want to make sure that these solutions are designed to solve African problems. Because the mistake that we have a lot of time, even with the creative people, is they're trying to channel Western narratives and all those. Because that's what they're trained in.
Yeah.
But also not only that, sometimes many of them think that's how you get validated. If you speak and you reflect to the rest of the world what they taught you.
And they'll be surprised. The world is hungry for our stories.
I don't want to say what they normally say. What do they say normally with the last frontier? I don't think we're anybody's last frontier.
No.
I think we're our own frontier.
Yes.
And we need to be in control of that frontier.
Yep.
So, and when they refer to us as the last frontier, that means it's the last place to extract from.
Yeah.
So we need to guard against that, and we need to be at the forefront of leading that.
Most
and I think from a law perspective, from an AI perspective, from an IP perspective.
Yeah.
By the way, you know, from an IP,
Africa
only accounts for 1.8% of the global trademarks.
Wow.
When you look at China and Americas and all those, they're in the 20s.
Huh.
And if you look at how much we spend on research and innovation, we spend, I think, less than 0.5% of our GDP on research. Now, research is the foundation of innovation.
That's right.
So now when it comes to AI and all those, so it means that even from a university's perspective, we need to spend a lot more money. But you don't have that problem because at UJ, that is the one thing that you identify way before everybody else did, that AI technology and all those should be the center of everything that you do.
That's right. Thebe, you've spent time with young creatives, entrepreneurs, and thinkers across the continent. When you look at the generation that's going to inherit both the promise and the risk of AI, what gives you confidence and what keeps you up at night?
In the continent, 70% of the people are under the age of 30.
Yeah.
They are hungry, they are innovative, they are creative. They are, and they are raring to go, and they do not operate under the same rules. So that's exciting.
Mm.
But what worries is when they want to be validated, when they seem to think that excellence to them means doing things according to Western constructs and standards.
Yeah.
So what we need to do for the young people, we need to reinstill in them and empower them to believe in themselves, to believe in the power of made in Africa, the power of buying Africa. We need to show them the opportunity that we're in a continent where when the borders are broken up, we'll be a $3.4 trillion economy,
right.
1.4 million consumers. If they see that as opportunity, they will understand why Amapiano is successful. They'll understand why Thebe Magugu and Maxhosa are successful.
Yeah.
They're successful because they've realized that the value lies in our authenticity, in what makes us different. So to me, what keeps me awake is asking myself the question, how do we make our young people understand and value that which comes from us?
Right.
Because that's what's going to distinguish us. So even from an AI perspective, from an AI and IP perspective, I'm expecting that they will be at the forefront of inputting into these systems, into these learning models, ideas which are authentically African.
Right.
And because that's what we are going to require if we're going to contribute to the global economy, not just to benefit from it.
In the creative economy space, I mean, Afrobeats is the world's most streamed genre. Nollywood is the world's second largest film industry by volume. African fashion is a $1 billion global conversation. These aren't marginal cultural products. They are dominant ones. And yet the AI tools generating music, scripts, and visual content, we're not trained on them in any meaningful proportion. What's the IP exposure, and what does Brand Africa do about it?
I think it goes back to the opening segment.
Yeah.
When we spoke about he who feeds you controls you. Mm-hmm. So in the space of whether it's amapiano or the Afrobeats or the fashion and all those, let me tell you a quick side comment. Mm. I went to Umgidi, it was a coming of age.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was looking to the Umbako what to wear.
Yeah.
And they said to me, go to the shop. When I went to the shop, and when I arrived at the Umgidi, I saw 2-3 people who dress exact same things. Mm. When I look in the label, it says made in China.
What?
Because what the Chinese have done is, they don't even need to come here, by the way. Mm. Because if you think about it, 63% of the people who write about the continent have never been to the continent. Mm. They need to write about it. What they're doing is, they have now decoded our culture. Mm. And they, and they've put it into these systems.
Yeah.
And they have now fed it back to us as that which is authentic. So the challenge of the continent is how to reclaim our culture. And redefine, if you will, our global influence through what that which is authentically African. And because we've got that in us, we've got the I mean, Fela Kuti is probably turning in his grave when he finds out that people can just program Afrobeats and some Chinese guy can now be singing in as Fela Kuti. Mm. That you go anywhere in the world, you go to Korea, they are now the amapiano teachers.
Wow.
And so that's because these days it is so much easier with AI. Mm. And that's why, to me, if there is a frontier, the last frontier in AI is how to close the borders and to protect our territory.
Wow, that's incredible. Now, Tebe, there's this thing about language, you know, language as a strategic asset. Africa is the most linguistically diverse continent on Earth. But the AI is reshaping African education, commerce, and culture, primarily in English, French, and Portuguese. The languages of colonization, if you like, and not of the people. So is linguistic diversity Africa's AI disadvantage, or could it be its greatest competitive differentiator?
Of course it's going to be its greatest competitive differentiator.
Yeah.
Because you see, I don't speak Chinese.
Yeah.
But the Chinese, because they speak to themselves in their own language. Mm. And matter of fact, I'm not even sure they're worried about globalizing the Chinese languages. Mm. I think they've just decided this is going to be our thing, our language. Mm. It's almost where we hide our ideas.
Yeah.
Out of our 2,000 languages, we also ought to ask ourselves the question, why do we not prioritize our languages?
Yeah.
Why do we not begin to code in our languages? Mm. But there's movements. There's groups out of Kenya. Mm. I think even in South Africa, any other countries in the continent, where the idea of coding in our language is beginning to take shape. Because until we do that, we're always going to be speaking to other people through the languages that carry with them a lot of the things which are not us. Mm. The culture, the way of doing things. But also, and they may not necessarily be to our benefit. I'm not saying that they're wrong to be speaking English or any other language, but I'm just saying that I'm probably more expressive and better expressive if I speak in my language.
Yeah. The other nations are taking this seriously to make issues concerning AI more accessible in their own languages. You know, Prof. Marwale and I wrote the book, AI and the Law, published by Palgrave Macmillan. You know, we wrote that book in English, and to date, it has been translated in two other languages. The first one is Chinese.
First one is Chinese.
And the second one,
well, I mean, there's like 1.2 billion people.
Yeah.
So that gives an idea.
Exactly.
And do you know why the Chinese are looking at that? Yeah. Because you wrote the book from an African perspective.
Yeah.
Do you know why they're looking at it?
Yeah.
They're looking at how do I penetrate the African market space.
And understand.
So they need to understand from that, from an African, you know, between you and Prof. Marwale, the two of you, probably the foremost thinkers in that space.
Yeah.
That's why it makes sense.
AI and the Law.
And the Law.
And there aren't that many
and
books.
And I don't think there are many books like that.
No.
Yes.
And then the second language, guess what? It's Arabic.
It's Arabic. And if you think about North Africa, then the Arab world, and then the Muslim world, they speak Arabic or sometimes read Arabic. I'm not sure all of them understand it, but most of them read it and they speak it.
And guess what? You know, I mean, it's not even available in my mother tongue.
Right? So, and that's maybe the challenge. But that's, to me, you know, this is not an AI issue. Mm. No, I think our culture is not an AI issue. Yeah. Our culture is an identity issue.
Yeah.
But it's also a confidence issue.
Yeah.
That because we lack so much confidence in who we are, we then fail to impress and to feed into these systems things that come from our language.
Yeah.
I mean, I think just break the mold, Prof, and write the language and translate the book into Setswana and see what happens.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that was the first... I guess
it will be only two copies sold, you know. One, I know you'll buy one, and then I'll buy the second.
Well, I think there's a PhD in Setswana from UNISA and from Northwest, if I remember. So you got two more.
Yeah,
people will be reading it, right?
But we have to make sure that we have our works published in our own languages.
Your two books. What's important about them is they were trying to tell leadership lessons from our perspective. If that input goes coded into the learning models.
That's right.
We now have an ability to be able to no longer just speak about Peter Drucker, about Tom Peters, about all those.
Yeah.
Now we speak about Mbedi and Marwala and Nicola Feng.
Mm.
So we're contributing to the broader leadership language that comes from an African perspective.
Mm.
And that's the challenge that we have. Even now, for example, because we have fed the system an idea that anything made in Africa is inferior. As a result, when I'm doing a leadership a program, and I want to go to Harvard, I want to go to Oxford, I want to go to Cambridge, I want to go to INSEAD, instead of saying that, but I'm an African, won't I get better lessons on leadership from an African perspective? Which is what I think you did so well, you know, from Predator to Prey,
trying to speak about some of those lessons
that come from here.
Yeah.
So now we take those lessons, but because those lessons are now just reduced to a book, we now need to make sure that book now becomes what gets fed into the system.
When
leadership leaders around the world are trying to compare and to contrast and to learn about leadership, some of the things that come up from Africa comes from Predator to Prey.
Yeah.
And some of them come from everywhere else, from Rooted and Rising, if you will. And now they begin to contribute to the global product.
That's right.
And Africa is no longer reduced.
Yeah. Wow. And somebody has approached me, and that person would like to help facilitate that from Predator to Prey be translated to Chinese.
I love that. The reason they want that is not because necessarily that they that they want to make money out of it, but they want to understand how to engage better with African leaders, or in African leaders' situations.
Yeah,
and that's our responsibility.
It's important,
because what we've done for now for decades and decades
is
to replicate and send back to the world that which they fed us.
That's
now in the AI space.
Yeah.
When we now get into these AI platforms and we're trying to find the references, we get back that which for decades and decades we've been reading, which doesn't come from Africa.
That's right.
So we have, we have a responsibility
for us to share.
It's time to. But then in sharing, we also need to make sure that we share in the revenue. Because that's the other, that's where the law comes in now.
Yeah.
In terms of now, how do you protect the creators?
That's right.
How do you ensure that, just like we input into them lessons on African leadership as an example, how do we then also profit from that? The same scenario I spoke about the Hollywood Actors Guild.
No fame without fortune.
No fame, right?
In 10 years, when the history of AI's impact on Africa is written, what's the version of that story you're working on to make real?
Well, the version of a story that I'm working on to make real is the realization of the Africa of the African Agenda 20, African Union Agenda 2063, which is looking at an Africa that is at peace, that's prosperous, and that's connected.
Yeah.
And what's going to do that for us? I think the first thing is going to be AfCFTA.
Yeah.
Because AfCFTA, if you will, is our economic architecture, because it's going to open up the borders. But it's also going to connect us as African. But it's also a version of an Africa where we are in charge of our own content, if you will, of our data. And then where our culture is our voice to the world.
Yeah.
But most importantly, that we are benefiting from that which we put in.
Yeah.
Because as Sankara said,
yeah.
he who feeds you controls you. So I'm hoping that as Africans, we'll be feeding ourselves and controlling our own destiny.
Wow, he who feeds you
controls
you. Teve, thank you for these profound insights. AI is indeed just code, But when applied to the soul of a continent, it becomes a powerful narrative force. It is our duty as lawyers, leaders, and citizens to ensure that court has a conscience. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Prof. Thank you.
Thank you for watching and listening to Beyond the Code. I am Letlhokwa Mpedi. Join us next time as we continue to explore the legal frontiers of our digital world. Stay informed and stay inspired.